Folks, I have some exciting news. First of all, support for today's show comes from Podchaser. Second is Just for Fun. On today's episode of The Wolf Den, I'm joined for these ads by Harry. Hi, Harry.
Hi, what's going on?
Harry, you introduced me to Podchaser, so you love it.
Yes,
would you
great.
Agree with the following statement? Podchaser okay. is the ultimate podcast directory, building the IMDb equivalent for podcasts.
True.
Rate and review individual podcast episodes, create a custom list of your favorite podcasts or podcast episodes, and easily open your favorite podcast in your preferred listening app directly from Podchaser.
You can do all of that.
That's amazing. Guess what, Harry?
Yeah?
Starting this fall, you can find and follow your favorite podcast creators on Podchaser with Podchaser's new creator profile pages.
How cool.
To learn more, go to podchaser.com.
I will.
Peter Kafka is the executive editor of Recode and co-producer of the Code Conference. He's also the host of Recode Media. Every Thursday, Peter talks to the smartest and most interesting people in media and entertainment. Not me yet, but we're clearly getting there. That's people like Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times journalist Emily Steele, 8th grade director Bo Burnham, who I have the biggest of man crushes on, and BuzzFeed CEO Jonah Peretti. He's also had some really fun interviews with comedians like Larry Wilmore, Samantha Bee, and Jimmy Kimmel. I want you to subscribe to Recode Media right now on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're currently listening to me right this very second. Will you do that for me, Harry?
I'm doing it right now.
He is. I see his phone in his hand. Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting. I'm your host, Lex Friedman. Today, our guest is Grant Rutter, the podcast producer at NBC. Hi, Grant.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for welcoming me here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for being here. We're going to learn more about you in just a minute. But first, we're going to talk about shows we're jealous of, where we highlight shows we like so much we wish we had made them. Grant, do you have a show you're jealous of?
Yes, I do. And I've used it actually as a model for some shows that I'm working on currently. Better Call Saul Insider podcast. I don't know if you've listened to this show.
I haven't, but I got to tell you, Better Call Saul, literally one of my top five TV shows of all time.
Right?
Yeah.
And the podcast is just as smart, and I love the show because what they do is they break down each episode in depth, not the story, but how it was made. And they credit one another for everything from the music cues to editing.
Oh, wow.
And they don't dumb it down. The editor will be there and he'll talk about specific effects and processes that he goes through. And he uses real life, real terminology. And, you know, it's smart. It speaks to the audience, which is obviously a smart audience. And I love that show. And that's how it's done well.
Do you watch it? Do you listen to it while you're watching the show? Like, is it like a commentary track or is it after?
It's mainly after. It is a lot like commentary in that sense. Like, you know, it's like evolved from the DVD commentary that nobody watches anymore. But each episode individual and they go through and sometimes they don't cover every scene, but they'll cover like the big shots and the big moments and they'll talk about how long it took to do things. And I think it's great.
And it's a perfect show for that kind of in-depth discussion, just given how slow it can be in a way that I think aggravates some audiences. And then there's people who just love it who are like, oh my God, we're just going to wallow in this moment for so long. I love it. I break the rules of this segment pretty much every week at this point, but there's a show that Earwolf makes. I just have nothing to do with it, called Hollywood Handbook. And it is a long time fan favorite for Earwolf, where the two comedian co-hosts, Sean Clements and Hayes Davenport, act as if they are deep Hollywood insiders, and they are not. And it's really kind of a parody of itself, and it's ridiculous. But the reason I am so jealous of it is I'm behind by like a month. They recently performed live. Team Coco had brought them to a stage to do their podcasting live at, I think it was South By? Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. And I wouldn't say they bombed on stage for this live show. They would. I think that they just did not do great. It was an audience that was mostly not familiar with their show. So instead of releasing just the show, they did a commentary track for that episode as you heard it. So the recording that came out in your podcast app was them playing this live show and then interrupting it to talk about, in their kind of characters that they perform on that show, talking about, so you could hear that joke went over really well with the audience. They're really the audience did not respond at all. And so it's meta comedy and hilarious. And it's just their brains were working at such a level. And I loved it. So I recommend that episode of Hollywood Handbook. I recommend all of Hollywood Handbook.
That's a way to make it work.
Exactly.
You know?
They found a way to take something they could have thrown away and instead made it, like, I think possibly the best episode in the history of Hollywood Handbook. So here we are with you, Grant, and your official title is podcast producer at NBC.
That's correct.
The National Broadcasting Company.
Yes.
Okay. do you avoid all other broadcast networks? Are you an NBC man only?
you know, with this on-demand culture, who knows what's on what? You know what I mean? Like, on my Apple TV, I have so many of those little apps for everything.
Oh, of course.
I watch, like, one show on TLC, one show on TNT, but they're all there. So I don't know what's on
and
what
anymore.
And
97 shows on NBC.
Yeah. But there's a lot on NBC. I mean, like, I live and breathe those shows, and I'm surrounded in a lot of brainstorms. So I am very familiar with them, and I do watch a lot of NBC. And I always did. I was an NBC page.
Nice.
I've always been very loyal to NBC. I was an NBC peacock within the television when I was, I believe, 8 for Halloween. So who knew?
Nice. Wow. You did, apparently, Grant. Talk to me about the structure at NBC. Where does the podcast producer team, are you the only podcast producer?
I am,
and,
yes.
And where do you report into there?
Sure. I'm in the part of NBC Entertainment Digital. So I report into a few executives who oversee digital production there. Yeah. And so we're churning out a bunch of content. It's the stuff that you can find on YouTube, the original stuff, after shows, as well as a bunch of good, you know, great social media engagement. So that's where I've been kind of resting over there. And it's a new position. I came in December.
Okay.
And I've hit the ground running, you know. I mean, we've got shows that we're constantly working on, and it really is just me. But I do have an editor for about 5 hours a day.
Got it.
So,
and if you had been pregnant when you first started, you would be delivering the baby now.
Like, exactly.
You've been one gestation of NBC. Okay, so let's back up a step. We obviously, you were always interested in NBC. That we established. You were a peacock, the NBC peacock specifically for Halloween. Which is incredible. Did you have like
the TV? I was a television with a peacock on it. I'm not walking around like it's Vegas.
Did you have the chimes? Did you have the xylophone there so you could do do?
No,
do.
I wasn't that into it.
That's
was in a cardboard
made the
box
for me. Okay.
Yeah.
Next time, if you do it again, can you imagine as an NBC employee, as an adult?
Note taken.
I would love that. But so. Did you always have an interest in working in audio? You studied television, if I believe, but you now are at TV, but working in audio. How'd you get there?
TV broadcast was where I went originally, and it was actually within the world of soap opera. And it's interesting how now, you know, obviously soap started off in strictly with audio and radio, and now here we are in this space, and what's old is new again, and audio dramas and all this great stuff. How I got into audio was before I was a page, and I was kind of waiting it out. This was right after graduation, that very scary period between like May and the new year. I ended up volunteering at AfterBuzz TV and was a host over there. And that's really what got me into the audio space, where I was like, wow, someone really actually cares like what my opinion is on something like this. And I got to see how the whole operation was put together. It worked with the TriCasters and a studio. And I really was able to find out through that the level of engagement of audiences strictly for audio and the love that people have for that. And that opened me up to the whole world of, wow, this really is a thing and it's really going to be a big thing. And I just threw myself into it. And I was able to really concentrate on it because of my television experience. And I was able almost to focus more in on just the content versus the visual and the shot. You know, I went to film school and it was like, so, you know, you got to every little thing, you got to do everything 8 times and
sure.
All this stuff. And this was not the pace that I wanted to work at. So now I can concentrate strictly on audio content, make sure it's good quality and, you know, top tier versus having to worry about like everything else, you
right.
know.
And yes, there are certainly podcasts that can take a long time to produce, but even the most produced podcasts are a faster turnaround time than the least produced video, because
true.
Video's got two things you got to worry about, where audio would just have the one, which is so helpful. So how did you get to NBC? I know you told a little bit about this journey, but how did you end up becoming a producer for NBC podcasts?
Sure. I have been on and off at NBC for a long time.
Yes.
And I left, went to a production company, worked in reality TV for a minute.
I'm so sorry.
I always worked in development. I know, you know, that business is just, it's not what it once was within development. Let's say that. So I had the last position I had was an NBC television distribution. And I was doing that as an assistant, but during nights and weekends, I would head on over to AfterBuzz and I worked for them. So I really had these like two careers. And of course, I had my stuff, my independent stuff as well, grants, rants I did on the side. And so for me, I was always just working on these shows nonstop. And at the end of last year, I was finally able to meld these careers together. So I was still at NBC, but now I'm able to do what I love, able to produce. You know, it's a lot of networking and you know, meeting. And there's a ton of red tape.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're going from one position to another. So I interviewed for this job and I waited about 3 months. to know if I was even going to get it because there's so much, you know, transition, red tape and all this stuff.
Of course.
And I just said, you know what? I said to my current boss, I said, look, this is my job. This is exactly what I should be doing. If you want me, you got to fight for me. And then the next week it all worked out.
That's amazing. I love that story, actually.
Yeah.
So you're talked about what your actual role is. When they said we're hiring a podcast producer, did they know what they needed? And what? How have you defined the role?
Good question. This role has just changed and ebbed and flowed because it really is just me, and it's kind of viewed, you know, at least originally it was viewed more along the lines of like a pilot project. Now everyone, you know, is very much for the show and the show's an invested. But originally it was, and it still kind of is, to develop these shows and produce them. And I tell everyone my job is to get these shows made, period. With that comes a lot. I mean, you know, I'm still working for a corporate company, so there are a lot of meetings about engagement rates, completion rates, ad sales, and all these things in between, all types of marketing strategy. So I'm still very involved in too many meetings, but I am starting with developing the show. I produce the show. I have a mobile unit. I go out with that unit. I have my editor work on it. We go back and forth with notes, and then I'm the one distributing it, and I'm uploading it, and we put in the metadata, and we work with the team at NBC who writes that. And it really is like a one-man band. So for what you're seeing as far as The Good Place and American Ninja Warrior, that really is, you know, a Grant Rutter production.
Got it. And do you you mentioned ad sales, and I have so many questions that are not boring ad sales questions, but who's selling the ads right now for NBC Podcasts? Are there ads on
there? Currently no ads. There are house ads. You know, we're working and promoting our other – the plan was – and this is beyond me, but the plan was to implement them later into the game when we were a little bit more settled. I think they wanted you to put everything out clean, which I can understand to start. But now we've got some ads for other shows, like we've got NASCAR and NBC Sports and a couple of other things. So they're really dipping their toe into that. And we've had bunches and bunches of meetings. And, you know, it's inevitable that the ads will be coming.
And what does success look like for an NBC podcast right now? Are they looking for completion rate? Are they looking for audience size? How does NBC decide if a show is a hit so far on the podcasting side?
Audience size is the start. You know, there's a lot of barometers. You know, they match. There's a lot of content coming out of that office, and you know, you're looking at YouTube numbers, and you know, so there's a lot of comparison with those. It helps too to get a little press. Everybody likes a little press and all that. It's something new, so I think everyone's really excited about that. So as long as it remains exciting for people, I think it'd be, you know, pretty good for everyone all around.
Makes sense.
But yeah, numbers I would say are the most important thing right now as we're trying to grow. And really trying to make a name for ourselves.
So going back in NBC history, and I'm not going to ask you to rehash the full Team Coco debate, but I believe that one of the first NBC podcasts was Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which was the Late Night Research Department podcast. Seth Meyers kind of kept that tradition alive when he took over that slot, and he had a podcast. What leads NBC to say, let's start a network that includes the Seth Meyers podcast or the Late Show Late Night podcast, and say let's build a parent network around there? Was that your call, or did they bring you in after they'd already made that call?
They brought me in after because they looked at Seth and they said, you know, there's something here, and the guard had changed in the department, and you know, thankfully, one of his goals was to bring in podcasts, so they were able to kind of piggyback off of that show and say, look, we're doing it, you know, it's possible, and you know, this is something we should be considering. And then from there they grew, and it's like, okay, now what are we looking at? We're really looking at all day parts, and you know, we're really looking at what shows would make for a good podcast.
And getting it 100% that NBC's one of the big things they're looking at is how many people are listening and how big are these shows? What do they see as the value of having these podcasts? Let's say they get, you know, big listener numbers, maybe six-figure download numbers over time. What's the advantage to NBC for having this?
I believe it's more along the lines of good marketing. It's the brand marketing arm of the whole thing, you know, where we're able to really kind of celebrate that brand and keep people more engaged. I would say it's more engagement than anything else. And the goal always is, at the end of the day, to deliver like the most insider exclusive show that you can't get anywhere else. Because if you look at the podcast landscape, there's a lot of shows that cover NBC content, that cover ABC content, fan shows. And, you know, I came from AfterBuzz, which we talked about everything.
Yes.
I talked many hours about Real Housewives. but within NBC now, we have the opportunity to give you the hosts of American Ninja Warrior hosting the show. And they're real-time, like, companions and friends.
Can you say both of their names, the hosts of American Ninja Warrior?
Akbar Baja Biamila and Matt Eisman. Yes.
That's pretty good.
They've been in my head for a long time.
You did the hard one first,
time.
Which is pretty good.
I get to rip the band-aid off. You know, they've been in my head for a long time. But the goal is really to deliver that, like, you know, exclusive, you're not going to get this anywhere else but NBC content.
So you mentioned the American Ninja Warrior podcast. We've talked about Seth Meyers. There's the Good Place show. And then there's also M-Town.
Yes.
Which is tied into Trial and Error.
Correct.
Okay. And so those are the four shows right now? Are there more to come, or are there others that I don't know about?
Yeah, no, there's more to come. We're in development. We're going back and redoing a pilot for one show that I don't think anyone would really be able to guess, which will be interesting. And then we're looking at the fall season as well. You know, what are our big priorities? You know, there's always those A1 priority shows that we roll out in the fall. So what is that going to look like? And, you know, there are a lot of moving parts to these things, especially when the network doesn't own certain shows too. Then you're dealing with lawyers, and you know how that goes. So
I hate it. It's the worst part of my job.
So you're literally just like waiting and waiting, and everyone's, you know, once there's wind of anything, like, oh, we're thinking about doing this show.
Right.
Everyone's like, what's the status with that? What's happening with that? Is that happening? It's like, you never really know until, like, you know, and then it's like it's on. You
know? It's time for, yeah, I get it.
So
you've got these shows for podcasts tied into different TV shows, and you're saying that one of the advantages for NBC is certainly many people could make a Good Place podcast, but you have first party access to the actors and writers.
Correct.
And producers. Do you also get on-air promo? Because I'm a regular Good Place watcher, and I see often when they do the Chyron that's like, hey, tweet along with the cast right now. I haven't seen listen in as so-and-so discusses this episode with so-and-so. Has that started to happen? Are you pushing for it to happen?
Well, the show returns the 27th, I believe, of September.
Oh, I'll be there.
Yeah, so with that, we'll have they call them the on-air snipes, and they are at the bottom of the screen, and it's
named
like
after Wesley, who
download
created
the
them.
App and all that.
That's not true.
What has happened?
They were named after Wesley Snipes, who created them.
Oh, great. Wow.
That's not true. But so it's better because I made the same joke twice. But so this season, you're going to get the on-air.
Yeah. And we have them for American Ninja Warrior as well. That's really, like, you know, I think the best we can do with that. And, you know, the digital footprint is large, luckily, on those social channels. And, you know, we've really been able, honestly, with very little marketing up until this point, we've been able to grow the Good Place podcast consistently. And we've had really good numbers with that. And everyone's very happy with it. So
do you want to talk about numbers?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about them.
So you say we've been able to grow and we're happy with it, what does that look like? What is the size of a Good Place podcast?
Well, it started off like, I don't know if I should say specifics, but, you know.
I think you should. If we're taking a vote, 50% of the people in this studio say
shoot.
Yes.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, we're getting towards, we'll be at like 1 million downloads of that show soon.
Yeah.
I'll say that much. And so that's good considering, again, like, you know, we've got reputable names. Obviously, we've got Ted Danson on the show, Kristen Bell, and Mike Schur. And Mike Schur has a tremendous following online.
Yep.
But to start, you know, we really just started rolling out June 1st. Again, started off small, but every time that it gets mentioned somewhere, or, you know, every time the episode comes out, it's more and more and more. So it's a good thing.
That's fantastic. And you've got on the Good Place show, you've got a great host in terms of Mark Evan Jackson, who's also just a great comedy talent and a great podcasting talent in general. And so I have a really kind of, I think, insightful and introspective question about this, but
sure.
I'd like to tease. So before we get there, we're going to take a break because we already have ads. NBC, we're not doing a house ads for NBC shows, but you should watch The Good Place when it comes back later this month. But we'll be right back with more after this. Harry?
Yeah?
Being prepared when an opportunity comes up is crucial, and having a business card ready to go in your pocket is the first step to making something happen. Do you have business cards in your pocket right now?
Maybe.
With Vistaprint, you can create a truly professional, unique business card in minutes. Upload your own design or start with one of their professionally designed options. Vistaprint offers simple tools and a wide range of templates to choose from.
There you go.
I have Harry's business card in my hand. It says he's a producer / studio manager, and his phone number is, I'm just kidding. But so Vistaprint's going to offer you all these tools and a bunch of templates to choose from, and then you pick the paper stock, style, and quantity that's right for you. Choose your delivery speed and then order, and you could receive your cards, guess, in how few days?
I'm going to guess 35 days.
Much faster. You can get them in as few as 3 days.
Whoa.
Your next big opportunity is coming right now. And for as little as $10, you can feel ready to make an impression with a custom card that you choose. With Vistaprint, you can look and feel like a big deal, whether you're a startup or a business with a century of history. I'm both. Actually, it's kind of true. We are a startup and Scripps is, okay. Yeah. Vistaprint wants you to do something great for your business right now, which is why our listeners, that's yours and mine, Harry, will get 500 high-quality custom business cards starting at just $9.99. Do you want to guess what the promo code is?
Wolfden?
Wolfden at Vistaprint.com. That's code Wolfden at Vistaprint.com. Wolfden at Vistaprint.com.
Why did you say it so many times?
Harry, we have another ad to do.
Okay.
Andy Daly's podcast pilot project. Have you listened?
Oh, yeah. So good.
When we did the first season, I was part of the team that approved the deal, and it was a premium. I think it was ad support and then became premium only. I didn't know what it was. I didn't get it. I didn't get that it was a shtick. And then when I finally listened, I was like, oh my God, why haven't I been listening to this for longer? Let me try to explain. Okay. It's Andy Daly and Matt Gourley. Right. I would literally say two of the funniest people in podcasting.
I agree.
Maybe just two of the funniest people, period.
I don't know.
You've seen Andy Daly on Silicon Valley Review, et cetera. He's like hilarious. Ads for some kind of car thing, but each week he plays a different character and they loosely script / mostly improvise a fake podcast pilot starring that character of Andy Daly's.
Yep.
It is funny as hell. Now, the show would be great if it was just the two of them, but do you know what, Harry?
What else?
They got guests like Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, and Jason Manzoukas.
They're so funny.
If you were on the show, mention that, it says, because this is really copy for Earwolf hosts, which I'm like barely.
I was on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
I hate you.
I popped in for the ads.
Subscribe to the Andy Daly Podcast Pilot Project in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen, and you'll get a new pilot every Thursday, just like my airplane.
Oh, boy. <The hell? laughs>
We are back with Grant Rutter, podcast producer at NBC, the one and only podcast producer at NBC.
You mentioned that.
You've got some big shows coming up. You know, NBC each year, there's the flagship fall shows. Yeah. You're thinking about those. But how do you decide, I guess, two things? One, what shows merit a podcast? And then two, how do you make the podcast not sound like it's an ad, but rather that it's like actual, useful, ancillary, enjoyable content for me as a fan of the TV show?
That's a great question. And this is something we have. Okay, well, crediting. I like that. Here's the thing. When it comes to these shows, The Good Place has a podcast listening audience, as does something like a Parks and Rec, The Office, you know, the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like the Sure Reverse, I guess you could call them. Those are people who are listening to podcasts.
I would go Unishirts, but I'm with you.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, then there are other things, too, that you know, are more priorities, and it's like, let's see what we can do with these shows. And, you know, not everything's going to be a hit out the gate, but we do have to kind of look and say, like, okay, how much of a footprint is digital expected to create for right. this show? And, you know, ultimately, I am all about sitting down and being like, let's look at these shows. Who is going to listen to a podcast for this show? Who is the audience for this show? Is this more of a co-viewing family show? Is right. this, you know, more of like a you know, women, an older group of women, you know, like a little big shot show, like that probably wouldn't make like the best candidate for a podcast, you know? Right. So how the decisions are made are, you know, we have a lot of conversations and ultimately I am told. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And it's good. I mean, it's, you know, it works that way. And you know, again, we're still like getting started. As far as making these shows not sound like a commercial for the show,
right.
that's why I admire, and I mentioned earlier, the Better Call Saul Insider podcast, because it really speaks to the process of the show. And it's very complimentary and it's very personality driven. You know, you've got the two EPs who are on almost every episode of that podcast. And that's really impressive that they could even get those people to do that. And so it shows that they really love their show and that they're super invested. So what I like is I like to have it feel like such a conversation between these two people. And Mark Evan Jackson, who's, I want to again credit him for being so great, but he's such like an everyday man too. So it brings in the audience and it feels like they're in a conversation. And that's what I want to go for with like these people you see on TV, but yet it's just like a chat. It's so casual and they're making fun of each other and self-deprecating. And that's how I spin it.
That's what we do on this show also.
Yeah. That's how I spin it. So that way it's not like, watch us every Thursday night.
Right.
And then the chimes like, no, you know, what I've done is I've entered now within season two, we've entered in these in-world ads and they're from businesses and products that are goofed on in the show. Well, made up things.
All the Megan and Ram businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all the made-up stuff. And so that is another thing, like to add in a little bit of an Easter egg, which keeps people, you know, interested in, as well, and you're not preaching to anybody. And it's like, you know, people who love this stuff are going to listen for small things, and I want to do more stuff like that.
And do the shows come into this kicking and screaming begrudgingly, or is it more like every show is reaching out saying, hey, when can we get a companion podcast?
This is a very complex question because, you know, we're dealing with shows that are in production. Like The Good Place has been in production for the whole summer and spring. And they're only a couple hundred feet away on the Universal lot where we are, which sounds really convenient. It is not, unfortunately. You know, they're very busy, obviously. It's their priority to get the show made in time. Everyone's got, you know, trips and vacations and films. So to try to get that done with that show is like the biggest challenge. And it still remains that way.
Yeah.
You know, as just getting access and, you know, who can we
honestly, the hardest part for Harry with this show is just getting me in the studio. So I get it.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. It's so tough. I mean, you know, you've got someone like Ted Danson, and he's wonderful.
Yes.
And he comes in and gives you the time, you know, but it's like, you know, how many times can you ask this man who's very busy and doing commercials right. and film and traveling, you know, to do the podcast? And, you know, luckily everyone's been great. And it's, you know, I have to say, everyone associated with the show, there's no egos. You'd be very surprised. The people you would expect are not the people. It's the people you wouldn't expect that I've learned in this business of podcasting that are the ones that have the ego. Little juice for you.
I like that. So now I'm going to think about who does have the egos, because I can guess some of those supporting players. You can just tell. So do you think, does it have to be a show for NBC to make an NBC podcast that's a companion piece to a TV show? Does it have to involve the staff? Is there ever a chance that there's just a straight up fan show that becomes an NBC official podcast just because you're so fond of the,
you know, I
the,
think that's
doing.
A possibility in the future. I think, you know, looking at like fan acquired shows and, you
so
know.
Harry and I are going to make a couplehood podcast. It was only four episodes, but we really liked it back when it was on. What was it called? Coupling.
Coupling.
We're gonna do that one.
Oh yeah. What was that on NBC?
It had a Friends lead in. It was little known fact. I was offered a job as a writer's assistant on that show. And I was like, no, I'm going to turn it down because I just bought a house. And I was like, I can't go back to making like $450 a week. And then it got canceled four episodes later. And I was like, I am happy. Yeah, it was a British show that they were remaking to.
Okay.
It came after Friends? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so this wasn't a podcast. This was a television show.
TV. Yeah.
Okay, all
but
right.
We're going to make a podcast about it now. Because you're saying you'll take fan shows. So we can really go deep on those four. You're with me, Harry? Harry says he's in.
If it's on the Peacock, you know, you never know. You never know. But yeah, I think that's something that people can consider. And, you know, as we grow, I think that's the way to go. I mean, unless if, you know, I am but one man, as I tell people at work. So I'm all for growing this network and having great shows on it. But I am but one man to do all this work. So, you know, and I have to credit Trey, who edits. And he's my, you know, kind of my right-hand man. We don't work together. Unfortunately, he's remote. Mm. But he's, you know, keeps my head on straight.
If you want just like an easy, because I see that you like comedies. If you want to tell him that he did a great job, you can say he did très bien. And that'll probably go over well. So the show that feels the most unusual of the four that you're making right now is M-Town, Where Murder Happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one that kind of exists within, like the ads on the Good Place podcast, these are a show that exists within the universe of the TV series. And it's not NBC's most popular show. I don't think I'm talking out of turn. I watched the first season.
No,
it felt like a parody of a podcast more than anything else, quite frankly, that first season.
Right.
So where does the idea for that show come from? And do you think there's more of that to come?
Here's the deal with M-Town. So this came from the show. You know, it's in the universe of the show, and they wanted to do it. So Paul Buckley at NBC, he works with that show. And so he helped develop that and produce it. So I actually really haven't touched that other than distribution. But that would be more along the lines of like your earlier question, like our show is banging down your door to do a podcast. And that was something they wanted to do. Other shows, you know, they've just got too much going on. Plus, here's the thing. We're still so new. We haven't really made that footprint. So not everyone knows that NBC is in the podcasting game. So as these shows grow and like, wow, okay, this is something we can be doing, I expect more of that type of stuff. But these folks over at M-Town, I think they just wanted to do it. I didn't think they knew that we had a podcast or not.
So they started making it like, by the way, guys, this is part of the NBC podcast.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh,
sure it is. They wrote it and they scripted it. And, you know, it's gotten some good write-ups. And, you know, I like it because it's short form. I really am an advocate for short form these days, podcasts specifically.
Yes.
And I think, you know, it's like 10, 11 minutes. And I think that's a really great model.
Oh, I love
model.
That, actually. Yeah. Not that long ago, this very podcast had an episode that was like 90 plus minutes, which is twice the length of our normal episodes.
I listened to it. Yeah.
Thank you. But I feel like, listen, people are going to listen to every minute of the podcast they love, but we could use more stuff that we can fit in, right? If I have an hour-long commute, I don't want to listen to a 90-minute show because I'll have to split it up. I want to listen to the show that's going to fit in there. Do you think that you at NBC would ever consider reviving old television characters with podcasts.
Oh, I love that.
All right, so I want you to credit Harry, because Harry's pitch, I know listeners know that I'm mostly just talking about Harry on the show. Harry's pitch for you is, we saw that Kelsey Grammer's thinking about bringing Frasier back. Make it a podcast call-in show. It's a podcast version of the radio show, and it's Frasier played by Kelsey Grammer. And Harry says he can sell it through. If you give him Kelsey's digits, he says he can make it happen.
Oh, well, I have to find Kelsey's number then, because I don't know that. Here's the deal. I don't. It depends who owns these shows.
Sure.
That's the thing. You know, who owns it? There's so much to it. Even an idea of doing a show that we own is like, wait a minute, where is this in syndication?
Right.
Who has this? Like, there's just, it's so much bigger than, you know, developing a show, which is unfortunate because, you know, everyone has such great ideas and, like, you know, there's so much potential, but there's so much red tape.
Yes.
Oh, God. Like, every little thing, you know, simple. Some things you think would be simple and it's like, oh, no, I'm getting, talking to you about this.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, do you want to tell us about any specific podcasts you have coming up, or is it too early to announce them?
It's a little too early because I don't have dates. There's one that we're working on, and I'm just hesitant to announce it here just because there's so much in flux with that show. But, I'm you know, more than happy to keep talking about The Good Place and season three, because that whole production model is going to change. And that show has quite a story behind it as far as, like, how that show is created. And we don't have a recording space. You know, I carry a little Pelican case, and we set up our little circus wherever we can.
So you can record that podcast wherever you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's
if they ever need to use the Earwolf LA studios, they are more than welcome.
Oh, so, well, thank you.
Just putting that out there. We're right there in Hollywood.
We've been in basements and closets, and, you know, we Kristen Bell's episode we did in the lunchroom of The Good Place, which was, you know, the editor took him 10 hours to clean up that audio because the air conditioning's on and off,
yep.
And there's the costuming next door. What a pain in the neck.
Fewer costuming noises here. Listen, before we get to everybody's favorite segment of the show now, which is the mailbag, I want to just give you kind of the opportunity to share advice, because we have a lot of podcasters and aspiring producers and actual producers who listen to The Wolf Den. So we always try to get the guests to share some advice. Is there some, like, what's the one piece of advice that you think is the most useful thing to share with somebody who's like, I want to do this. Maybe it's not for NBC. Maybe it's, not, let's say, we're not going to empower competitors. Like, ABC and CBS can, like, choke on it. We're not going to help them set up their own podcasting networks. But if somebody wants to do kind of the things that you're doing, what should they be doing now?
Well, I always say you got to set expectations. You know, a show is a living and breathing thing, and it's easy to start a podcast. It's not easy to do in a second episode, you know, and to keep going. And so that's what I would recommend to people. Really think long and hard about it. Do a few episodes and don't release anything just yet. I really think that people need to realize the overall workflow and set expectations. I'm always about trying to just what is feasible here. Even just booking guests, you know, we all have a couple friends that we can bring on, but, you know, as far as, you know, after that, then what, you know? So I just think that people have to keep realistic expectations. I'm not discouraging anybody in saying that.
Sure.
I just think that it's a ton of work to put together a really good show consistently and maintain a schedule. And if you have anything else you're doing, you know, good luck. It's just like, you know, it's a lot. And, you know, I just say that because I feel like I do have a lot of, you know, a lot of irons in the fire with this job, and everything, you know, requires so much attention. So that would be my first piece of advice. And second would be, obviously, I know this is said often on your shows, to reach out to people, DM people. My DMs are always open. And I wish more people were receptive to that. I was messaging a few people while I'm here in New York, and I'm trying to, you know, just to get some information, just to network more in the podcast space, because so much of the podcast world is based out of New York and Brooklyn, and very little in LA for me anyway. So I feel like, you know, when I'm here, I want to be able to branch out and meet people. So I wish people were more receptive to that. I get everyone's busy. You know, we're here on a Monday. I mean, it is what it is. I get it. But I wish people were a little more open to that. But just keep asking for, you know, for my record is like, for every 10 messages, I get like one like meeting, you know? So, you know, just keep going and try, but definitely don't be shy. You have to be really aggressive if you want anything. And that's my advice.
I love that. So I hope you're not done dispensing wisdom, because it's been a good talk, but we don't only talk to each other. We also talk to one Wolf Den listener each week, somebody who emailed in or sent in a question to the Wolf Den mailbag.
Wolf Den mailbag. Don't be happy, don't be sad. Now just sit back and enjoy this week's Wolf Den mailbag.
Is this you?
That is not me, sadly.
Oh, okay.
I wish. That's Casey Holford on the keys and the vox with lyrics by Harry.
Nice.
But this week's Wolf Den mailbag question comes from Jessica Cudler, who writes, "Hi, Wolf Den." That's me. "I had a bad dream last night, and it made me think, if podcasting goes away, goes the way of MySpace, the way of Friendster, the way of Vine, why would that happen?" So I guess there's two questions.
Lord.
Could podcasting go away? And if it did, why would it happen?
All I can think of is filing for unemployment. really don't have to think that way. If it would go away, I have to really think on that one. That's a tough one. Why would it go away? Perhaps just it may be overexploited. You know, you think, I think back to reality TV and I think of like when it was in its heyday and now it's like, you know, what's left and like everyone who's, that's like everyone's last ditch effort to get on back into the Hollywood scene is to do a reality show. You know, and I hope that it doesn't become that. I think that if it remains smart and it caters to a highbrow audience and it doesn't speak down to its audience, and that's something I'm so cognizant of, is not speaking down to the audience in any way, shape, or form.
Yep.
That, I think it will continue to attract the right people. But, you know, if it's going to turn into a bunch of nonsense and, you know, we're going to have like, I mean, I don't want to get in trouble, but if we're going to have like 9x Bachelorette contestants, you know, sitting around a table talking about Page Six, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that might be a way to kind of like, they lose interest.
So here's,
I don't know, I don't want to get in trouble.
No, you're fine. But my take is this, right? Like a couple weeks ago when Marco Arment was on, we talked about what would happen if Apple left the space. And Marco's perspective was it would be really bad for the industry. And I've been thinking about it ever since because I'm really wondering. And I think that it's maybe less true than it used to be, right? The fact that Spotify and Pandora have podcasting efforts now means that if Google and us with Stitcher, right?
Yeah.
If Apple were to drop the ball and say, and which I don't think would happen, but if Apple were to say we're out, I think that the content is so good and so lucrative and so beloved by listeners that they would find other ways to get there in an instant. So to me, the only way podcasting goes away is if other folks who are more entrenched in audio can find a way to compete with on-demand that works out of the box.
Meaning, mm-hmm.
If your SiriusXMs could let you very... My phone thought I was talking to it when I said Sirius. But if you're... if your SiriusXMs could make it so that you could, in the car, call up not just, I want to listen to Howard Stern or I want to listen to this, but I want to listen to this specific episode of this specific show right there in the dash in 2 seconds or with voice or whatever. That's, I don't think even that crushes podcasting, but I think it gives podcasting a run for its money. However, mm-hmm. I don't think it's where SiriusXM is going, and I think that they are much more of a kind of lean-back listening experience. So overall, Jessica, I reject the premise of your question. It's not going to go away. People like to have audio to listen to, and they're going to want to find especially free audio, and they're going to listen to it whenever they can, wherever they are, and I think that's exactly what podcasting is.
Yeah, I mean, look at the space, too, right now. I think we're really, you know, it's exciting. There's in Sunset and Highland, there's a big advertisement for The Daily, and that's the first time I've seen any type of real push, like mainstream, like public push like that, with my own two eyes for a podcast, and I was like, I put that on Instagram. I was like, thank God for this, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it raises all boats or whatever the whole, that's
right. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's just great to see.
Boats are happening. That's
yeah,
what I'm saying.
We've got to get, you know, we need people to know, not only because people now know what a podcast is, but we need people to get listening to these shows.
Yes.
And I always tell people, like, you know, and your audience knows this, but it's like when it comes to finding a show, it's on any topic. And then from there, you can narrow it down based on what type of host you like.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like there's like 8 shows about, like, you know, let's just say in theory about 8 shows about the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yep.
But then there's like, you know, some people that are boring, some people that know a little bit of insider stuff, some people that are comedians, and you kind of, like, you know, sift from there and find where you want to go. And that's what I've been telling everybody, like that, and it's just going to keep going. And I think, you know, thanks for the question, Jessica, and I think we'll be safe. You can go back to bed and relax.
That's right, yeah. Dream easier tonight.
Yes.
If you have a question, if you're worried, if you're staying awake at night, like, I need the Wolf Den to answer us, you can email us at wolfden@midroll.com, wolfden@midroll.com, tweet at me, LEXFRI, and we'll try to answer it. Well, again, Grant, thank you so much for being here. I'm glad we did not set you off on any rants this time, but where can our listeners follow you online?
You guys can find me on Twitter @itsgrantsrants, and the same thing over on the gram.
Very cool. Yeah. Oh, the Instagram, where you posted that photo of that billboard. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks to Harry Nelson. Again, the Wolf Den mailbag theme is Casey Holford's. Subscribe to the Wolf Den at Earwolf, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to rate us in whatever app you use. And don't forget to go check out NBC's podcasts. And The Good Place is coming back for next season when?
The 27th of September, but all episodes you can find, you can watch, listen to podcasts for season one and seasons two to get caught up, and then we sync right up with season three at the end of September.
Love it. Thanks so much again for being here, Grant.
Thank you for having me. My thanks to Lex and to Harry. Thank you.
Nice. Don't forget to tell us what you thought about this episode by leaving a review on Podchaser, the only platform with ratings and reviews for individual podcast episodes. I give this one a 10, unless it's on a scale of 1 to 5. And if you're a podcast creator, you can register for early access to Podchaser creator profile pages at podchaser.com/creators and get a free t-shirt and a sticker branded with your podcast's artwork. Harry, will you do that for the Wolf Den?
You know, I have. I did it already, I think.
I want the sticker.
Okay.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.